the internet, and welcome to season 145, episode 5 of The Daily Zeitgeist, a production of iHeartRadio. This is a podcast where we take a deep dive into America's shared consciousness and say officially off the top, fuck the Koch brothers.
Yeah, fuck that.
Fuck Fox News. Fuck Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah, wait.
Yeah, fuck you, Limbaugh. That's right. I said it.
Whatever.
To your face. Fuck Buck Sexton. Fuck it. Ben Shapiro. Fuck Tucker Carlson. All of the above. It's Friday, August 7th, 2020. It's DJ Daniel's birthday! Woo! Leo Power.
Leo.
And he's not here, so he's just going to hear this on the edit. Happy birthday to you.
Yeah, Dan actually cut that out because we don't want that wasn't for the listeners. That was just for you.
Please cut that. That was just a personal message to you.
We don't want the listeners getting wind of your birthday and sending you any kind of salutations or whatever.
Right. That's against the NCAA rules. We keep an NCAA rules guideline above on all of our podcasts.
Also, when are you going to sign that Adidas deal, man? Got to get that done.
Hey, guys. My name's Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. Quarantine Boy. I hate quarantines. They get me. He's so steamed. Vaccines. I prefer a vaccine. That is courtesy of Skull Vikings. And Will Ferrell is the devil in SNL. And I'm thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
Get ready.
You let us second rate you. You let us educate you. Our podcast penetrates you.
Gross.
We will uncomplicate news. Daily, we joke about the zeitgeist. Help me, ate too much Taco Bell. Really, the only thing that works for me is recording pause with checking myself. This shit's as fucked up as an enema. So many turds are in the zeitgeist.
Okay, I don't know.
That is so evocative.
Shout out to Crispy Meme D. Christy Yamaguchi May for bringing it back to our boy Trent.
That was fire.
Trent Rezzi.
Fire. Well, guys, speaking of fire,
I had to compensate, man.
Thrilled to be joined in our third seat by one of the all-timers.
Get your cold brew
it's
ready.
Been way too damn
Get your cold
long.
Ready.
Get your cold brew ready.
Get your YouTubes ready.
Crofton coming. He is the hilarious, the talented Mr. Chris Crofton. Whoa. Then he froze up. Good, man. You just froze for a second there.
Up there you go.
Oh, no, really?
Yeah.
We'll get the audio.
You won't get our response
for a second,
to whatever you just said.
We had the best intro, and it was frozen, and it looked like you had dropped your phone. But, hey, that's the beauty of doing this now in 2020.
That's right, man. Hey, guys. It's Miles and Jack in the future. You might be wondering why we're interjecting here. So what you're about to hear, the audio quality... the audio quality is not great coming from our good friend Chris Crofton. It's a full-on Chris Crofton episode. Chris is a total wild card, and that extends to his audio in this episode.
Yeah. So just brace your ears, because we figured rather than have everyone tweet us to make sure we know what we're hearing, yes, we do.
We know.
But that's the cold brew chaos that Mr. Crofton brings.
He is speaking into a microphone the whole time. We are forced to assume
so wild.
That the microphone was plugged into his belly button or just a house plant nearby or something because it did not come through. But anyways,
Either way, fun episode, as always,
with Chris. It's just a bit of a mess from an audio quality standpoint. But you will be hearing what we heard. Because this is what we were dealing with.
So just please enjoy this experience. Embrace it for what it is. It's consider it something different for your sonic palate.
This is actually a gift we gave to DJ Daniel on his birthday. The hardest episode ever to clean up. Anyways, back to our regularly scheduled program, man. If you can call it
2020.
This is
this whole setup that we got here, or just the year 2020?
Well, no, I mean, the year 2020 is fucked, but for me, as an older gentleman, this is a nightmare. I mean, like, to try and do any kind of show business for me, I'm more used to, using wires and stuff is not my favorite thing.
Right.
I mean, I'm like in a bowl of spaghetti over here. I got a fucking Chromebook. I bought a laptop and I didn't open it for a month and a half.
Nice.
Because I was intimidated.
Oh, yeah. Just you didn't know what was going to... In your mind, what was the worst-case scenario idea that didn't make sense, but you were in your mind like, but that could happen, and that's why I'm not opening this thing.
If it was good,
it was going to
ask me if I wanted to use Cortana.
You're like...
I mean, every question in the setup part to me seemed like a trick. They were like, do you want to use your information to tell us if your computer's broken? And I was like, no. Mm-hmm. And then they were like, well, what about using your information to craft a better internet experience? And I was like, yes. And then they were like, well, what about your... And I was like, I kept drawing, like, firm lines, and then, like, in the next question, back me off. I felt tricked. Like, I feel manipulated.
Right, right, right.
They're like, do you want to give your information to us? You're like, no.
Right.
Yeah.
Then they're like, well, what if you like golf and you want to get golf bag advertisements? And I'm like, well, that sounds reasonable.
Yeah. It's just limited to the golf part, right?
What if it will improve your user experience by 0.05%?
Right, right.
For real, no. You know what I mean? So, like, I was just afraid of the whole process because, honestly, I just don't know anything about laptops beyond, once you get past emailing checking Yahoo.
Yeah.
The world's number one search engine, Yahoo. That I
my favorite social media, that, Yahoo and then, Instant Messenger.
Checking my Angel Fire page, where you can find all my tour dates.
See the hit counter at the bottom of my blog.
And it does this cool thing when you bring the cursor over it; it sparkles like a magic wand.
Damn.
Animated cursors.
So I didn't open it. And the landlord where I live, his son kept checking to see if I opened the laptop. He's like, because he's 16, and he was excited about the laptop. Whereas I was sad about it. Like, I just kept looking at it and being like, fuck you, laptop.
It sounds like the shittiest Pixar movie.
the kid kept saying, like, have you opened your laptop yet? He's like, let me open it. Like, he was excited.
Oh, he was that kid at the birthday who wanted to open your gifts? You're like, bro, this is my birthday. My Chromebook.
He's like, you got a brand new laptop. You should be excited. Not sad.
Yeah. I would have paid to see you do an unboxing video of your Chromebook. That was the cause of so much torment.
Just pure confusion as opposed to any anticipation.
That's your new wave, Chris. Unboxing videos on YouTube where you hate everything and you don't even open them because you're pissed.
That's such a good idea. So I spent $1,100 of stimulus money or whatever on this fucking laptop. And because I figure, I bought this. It was $1,100, a lot of money. You buy something for $1,100, usually you'd be happy about
right.
it. But instead, it made me nervous and upset.
Well, that thing's you're going to make all that money back anyways.
On
that laptop, you're probably going to build a web page.
You got an OnlyFans yet?
That sounds like you guys are. Don't be mean.
All right, Chris, we're going to get to know you a little bit better in a moment. First, we're going to tell our listeners a couple of things we'll talk about. If we have time, we'll talk about the New York Attorney General, Letitia James, just setting her sights on the destruction of the NRA queen. We're going to talk about Facebook, Twitter, pulling videos of the president down, just things he said in a Fox News interview are illegal. Like, you can't even say them on Twitter and Facebook, the place where you can say almost anything.
Yeah.
We're going to look at America's schools as they reopen. Looking good there. We're going to talk about the parties that are going on in L.A. That Miles and I have been hitting up in the Hollywood Hills. We're going to...
Pretty sick,
you know,
dude. I'm going to stand by this. Paris Hilton, you suck as a DJ. I hate to say it, Paris, but you that party was lame last night, girl.
She knows that you say it with love, though.
Yeah.
No, we're going to talk about some of the parties that are going on around the country, how people are trying to... fight
shut
against
down the
it.
Party.
Shut them down.
I mean, the Beastie Boys already indoctrinated us years ago, man. Because we got to fight for the right, party, man.
That's right. It's just so much stuff that used to be acceptable levels of stupidity is no longer fun, and people are having a difficult time making that transition.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that, and we'll also figure out what we're watching over the weekend. But first, Chris Crofton, we like to ask our guests, what is something from your search history that's revealing about who you are?
Well, as you know, YouTube is my main way of passing the time, even without a coronavirus. So I guess it's a YouTube thing. Usually I search for things on YouTube. So my latest thing, and I hate to kick off the show on a morbid note, but I mean, what doesn't have a morbid note right now? So, NASCAR fatalities.
Oh, Jesus, Chris.
It used to be something like mudlarking and Bigfoot. What do you mean? So what happened? What were you thinking about? Like the fatality, like how many people drive, like how many drivers are casualties?
No, I like watching them crash and die.
Jesus, Chris.
Well, you can't see him die.
Right.
It just looks like
you sound like 19-year-old me watching like nothingtoxic.com, like those like awful websites. Dude, but you don't see them. You just know that. Just like, oh, it's gnar.
It's me in 1997 watching Rotten.
Yeah, right.
I was working at the Associated going to Rotten.com.
Oh yeah.
No, because I mean, I watched a Daytona 500 in its entirety. I don't know if I told you guys that. 1981. You can, there's a whole lot of Daytona 500s on YouTube in their entirety.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't know how they ended, which I sure as hell don't, I wasn't watching the Daytona 500 in 1981.
Yeah.
It's great, So I watched an entire NASCAR race one day. Okay, maybe I should say that. NASCAR in general. But, I mean, all you're really waiting for in a NASCAR race is for someone to crash, because otherwise it's just,
cars driving in circles.
It's just boring, I mean, like, the 1981 Daytona 500, for example, the announcers talk about how windy it is for, like, the whole race. That's all they talk about. And it's 3 hours and something. Well, I watched the whole thing.
Wow.
I mean, I was doing something else at the same time. But,
what do you suggest?
I was masturbating.
You recommend you
I was doing something
Daytona 500 on the back.
Yeah, we get it, Chris. Chris, what is something you think is overrated?
Oh, well, let me just real quick say, just because I don't sound like a murderer, I don't just I also watched that guy open old cans of food still.
Okay, of course. Just for the record, because we have new listeners, so people go back to other Chris Crofton episodes. For the record, I mean, crashes kind of are in your wheelhouse, because you also got me to watch that documentary of the dude who was flying over the river in that car, and that didn't go.
Yeah, I like car crashes.
Yeah, that's like kind of your thing. Yeah, you know, like, they're old school, baby.
I don't really care if people die. I guess I just like to watch the crash.
Yeah,
I mean, you fit right in with America's leaders.
I still feel like that's just a terrible thing to kick the show off with. Anyway, New England Wildlife and More. Go watch New England Wildlife and More, because he's the guy who opens the old cans of food. And he has the nerve to call his YouTube channel, New England Wildlife and More. Even though he never does anything with wildlife, it's always the and more. And the and more is always eating old food from the 1960s.
And more is actually old Dinty Moore cans of food.
he buries the lead in his...
Chris, what What is a food that holds up surprisingly well based on his channel?
Oh, pretty much all of them. He's always pleasantly surprised.
And it's like from the 60s. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, 60s, 50s. I mean, he just takes a little taste, and then he says, ooh, I don't know if I should have done that. But he does it every time.
What's something you think is overrated, Chris?
Something I think is overrated? Overrated seeing people.
Okay.
Like in, like physically?
Everyone that as everyone does that, yeah, it's like I was thinking about, you know, isolation. You know, like overrated is seeing people. Like you don't need to see them really, it turns out.
Yeah.
You're just good? You've been good with this whole quarantine thing?
I mean, my favorite thing is my friend. I have a friend who's like he's a recovered alcoholic like me. And you know, recovered alcoholics weren't big on feelings to begin with. You're just sort of starting to come out of your shell, and you really like to be by yourself a lot. So he was just like, he's like, the whole world has basically come around to my way of living. He's like, this is the greatest thing that's ever happened. He said when they were talking about opening back up, he said, Chris, I just want to say, wait a minute, this is working. Which I just thought was such an interesting perspective, and obviously an insane perspective, because I really like being by myself. I mean, my mood's up and down, and I thank God for hiking. I was about to say, so the overrated is seeing people, and underrated is hiking. I have had a complete awakening to nature as a result of this. Seriously.
Really?
I always considered hiking to be a chore, because my father growing up made fun of people who camped.
What is that? Just paint a picture for me of a scene in which you're a child and your dad is going out of his way to make fun of people that are camping.
Oh my God, my dad suffered from depression, so all he wanted to do was sleep. So he basically tried to make it seem like he was a genius and everyone else in the world was a moron. So he was just like, if you're not asleep, you're an idiot. For real.
Blanket statement, right?
Like explicitly, when I was like 6 years old, he's like, look at these idiots, like camping, what are you doing? You got your own house already with all the stuff, and then you're going to take your stuff somewhere
else.
Do
a shittier version of your house? Yeah.
Yeah, get out of here. We got a stove right here. You want to use a miniature stove in the woods? No, thank you. I'll sit here and watch television. Thank you very much. So I grew up thinking I hated the outdoors because it was a hassle.
Right.
Right. And it's dirty.
Well, if anyone ever asked,
and hot.
If anyone ever asked me to hike, I always thought to myself, oh, I'll do it, but I don't want to do it because it's a pain.
I feel like you may have even said that as an overrated at some point on the show. I feel like I've heard you talk spicy about hiking before. Like when you say that, or maybe that could just be a general comedian thing, because I don't think...
That could have been about digging and stuff. You gotta kayak to get laid in California, and I don't like that.
Yeah.
It's like, is there some way to get laid in California without kayaking? That's like a stand-up joke.
From 2002.
this guy's gonna do a stand-up. Everybody hates me. That's why I'm alone here with this microphone. I have been having the time of my life hiking. Every day hike. I've seen about a million bears.
Wow. Really?
I've hiked every single... Oh, my God.
Because you had a whole saga play out on your social media.
I had tons of bears. It's still going. I saw a bear rip the door off of the back of our house today. I mean, the back of our fence. I woke up this morning and there's a cat looking all garbage in the yard. And it was because a bear came and ripped a pretty good-sized gate off the back fence. And
to get to the trash?
And turned over the garbage cans.
Wow.
Yeah. So, that's not normal. but they're not constantly doing that. Because I put so many bears on my Instagram at this point that people from Tennessee that I know are like, how do you live out there? Are you just right. Bob and weave?
Yeah, head on a swivel. Right.
And it's not like that. But I've seen quite a few bears. But the main thing is, truly, I actually enjoy nature, which I feel like is a gift from this stupid pandemic.
What was the thing that you were missing? Like what aspect of being in nature did you get in touch with exactly that you found so nourishing?
It's a shift. It's a shift in perspective, because if you consider something to be something you don't want to do, and you kind of keep that in your mind the whole time, you'll do it, but you'll be like, oh, I can't wait for this to be over with. And then now, I had nothing else. So there was nothing else. I was like, oh, I just sort of, it was a perspective shift. All of a sudden, I found myself open to the experience instead of trashing the experience in my head. Like, usually I'm like, oh, I'll go on a hike if a girl wants to go, and then I'll just put up with it, but I really would rather be in a coffee shop. Well, now there's no coffee shops, so I just didn't have that mindset. And then I was like, oh, this is better than a coffee shop.
Right. That was like me and exercising. I'm like, whoa, taking care of my body.
It's incredible. I mean, it's a real deal.
Because I definitely had a Chris Crofton's dad mentality of like, why, man? I'm on the couch, baby. You know what I mean? Bring the world to me.
Yeah. And you look in the
watch
mirror.
Watch a nature documentary.
Right, right. And then I'm like, oh, my back hurts all the time. I'm like, because I don't stand up most of the day. Like, now I'm doing it all, baby.
Yeah. Maybe
it'll relax my back more.
It'll
relax you more.
Drinking was for everything. Yeah, yeah. My friend was an alcoholic, thought he was having a heart attack for real and asked for a beer and drank it. And then he was like sitting there in his chair going like, oh, I feel better. Oh man. I was like, you didn't have a heart attack.
Oh, man.
You had a DTs. Alcoholic attack, some kind of thing. So anyway, I'm a nature freak now. I mean, I did seriously. I hike every day for about an hour and a half. I met a girl in the woods.
All right.
That's weird.
She's not normal. No, she's not normal. She doesn't say anything, and then she walks by me real fast. And then one day she was like, can you help me? And I left my backpack in a tree, and I had to walk back in the middle of the night in the dark to help this girl because she didn't have a light. And I walked her back into the woods, and we both almost died. There was rustling in the bushes. I don't want to take up the whole show, but there's been a lot going on. But anyway, get out in the woods, people.
Wow.
Yeah, meet some people.
Woods, meet people.
Be a good Samaritan. Be the woods Samaritan.
What is what's a myth, Chris? What's something people think is true? You know, to
a
be
myth.
False?
Oh yeah, I don't know if I think some people probably think Glass Houses by Billy Joel, that album, isn't that good. And I can shatter that myth and tell you besides the hiking, it's the only thing that's been keeping me going. If anyone wants to kick this pandemic in the ass and get a fresh perspective, just blast off, Elena, and get out on the trail. Meet a woman who's left her backpack in a tree in the middle of the night and go take her there and help her out.
Yeah. I can also vouch for all of that. Yep.
How I met my wife. Is that album content? I don't know the Billy Joel discography enough. Is Glass Houses seen as just a shit album?
No, it's not. It's just, but it's not as, it's not considered one of the most powerful elixirs on the earth.
Right.
I love
the most powerful elixirs on the earth.
Which it is.
Thank you.
Don't Ask Me Why is one of my favorite Billy Joel songs. I was more of a greatest hits fan growing up, but
well, you're a little younger, yeah. Glass Houses came out in 1980, so I was like in fifth grade probably. So I mean, it's not like I wasn't like in the arena with a lighter, but that record had You May Be Right. I may be crazy,
but it just may be
a lunatic you're looking for. I mean, like, just like, it's all toxic masculinity, but everything before, you know, like 2000, actually, whatever, it's all toxic stuff if you really examine it. It's all just like, if you want a man that's a little unpredictable.
Right. It's like you're describing a really unstable relationship.
Yeah. No, it's all that. It's all that shit. It's just like, if you look at it now, it's just like the same. It's like, God, women must have been so annoyed through every period of time until now.
But for,
yeah, like, it's amazing. Because
men shut the fuck up.
Yeah, they just had to listen to men be like, I'm horny and a little bit drunk.
It's also a great example of like just sums up Billy Joel in the sense that it's full of really like great songs. But it also like the album cover sums up like what's not cool about Billy Joel, because it's called Glass Houses, and the cover is a shot from behind of him holding a rock, getting ready to throw it into a glass house.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And his just, throwing like, so form is off, though.
His throwing form bad.
Oh, yeah. He's a kind of a little misshapen kind of a man. Yeah. But that's his house. I like looked into the liner notes. Like, I don't know if they had a fake glass wall, but he's like, I realized when I was writing the record, I lived in a glass house.
Oh my God.
Chuck Klosterman's.
At that point, like, you're like the journalist, like, dude, shut the fuck up, dude.
Right? No,
thank you.
Wow. Oh, and you know he told that. So, you know, at a cocktail party or whatever. Like,
you won't believe this. As I'm writing
like, don't say it. He's going to say it. Don't say it. He's going to say it.
Christy Brinkley.
Turns out the title of my record. Oh no, he's going to say the same thing he said in Rolling Stone.
Yeah. He, sold 7.1 million copies in the U.S. alone. It's interesting. There's a great Chuck Klosterman essay about Billy Joel and Bruce Springsteen, like comparing the two of them, and how, you know, Billy Joel is, you know, sold about the same amount of records at their peak. Songs, like if you look at them song for song, they both have like comparably really good, like, songs that stand the test of time, but like Billy Joel's just like not cool. So he just like doesn't get the respect that that Bruce Springsteen does.
He doesn't have like that folklore hero like vibe to him.
Right, exactly. Billy Joel on this album cover is wearing boot cut jeans. I feel like you'd never see Bruce Springsteen in boot cut jeans.
Billy Joel had a little bit of problem with getting dressed, because he is like a, he's kind of shaped weird. He's very small.
Yeah.
I think he just had trouble probably. His stylist probably didn't know what to do with him. So they kind of they were always kind of like, try these boot cut
jeans. He's like,
jeans
do I always have to wear boot cut jeans? Yeah. The stylist always was, I don't know.
Otherwise they'll see the stilts.
Just cuff them.
He was like, does this look good? And the stylist was like, yeah, good enough, I guess.
Look, you're not Springsteen, man. I wouldn't think about it too much.
But I love Billy Joel for real. He's a great songwriter. I recommend that record. And I recommend especially All for Lena. That song, All for Lena. Go on a hike and put on All for Lena and just do your best. Sorry.
And do your best.
Do your best.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm talking about. Listen, that's how I grew up. I was the kid in the house that had to like make it so my parents didn't get divorced. So for me, this is a very hard time. So I'm like, I'm telling everybody how, I'm not kidding. I was the kid in the house that my parents were like, we're going to get divorced unless you do a joke.
Oh my God.
Oh, wow.
It was like that kind of thing. And then I would like do a joke or whatever. And they'd be like, you saved our marriage. So for me, this time is just like, I'm always like, there's a way to look at it where it's going to be okay, Mom.
Well, and I'm sure that hasn't tinged your engagement with comedy as a career in any way negatively.
No, probably not. I don't think so.
Great.
All right, Chris, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back to tell people what's happening right now. And we're back. And New York Attorney General Letitia James announced yesterday morning that she plans to destroy the NRA.
Very subtle. Like
she was just basically, she said, we seek to dissolve the NRA because no organization is above the law. But basically, she's pointing out all these different ways that they're technically a nonprofit, and they are using money that is donated to them to go on vacations. Like, their leadership team is just wildly corrupt. And that's not shocking, as they are a conservative political group. But I don't know. I guess it's tough for me to tell at this early stage if this is a like get Capone on tax evasion type of masterstroke, or if we're just doing gun rights people a favor by pointing out how brutally and thoroughly corrupt and incompetent their main organization is.
I don't know. I mean, I think at the very least, it's like one of those things where It could be. And then you can also just say, like, look, I'm just enforcing the law. And they're wildly corrupt. And that's right. what I'm here for. And like, when you like, you look at how like they had to blow through $64 million to like get their balance sheet to be in a deficit. It's like, all right, right. fuck it. Trips to the Bahamas, private jets, this, that, whatever you need. Like, we got to turn $64 million to get us in the fucking red. That must have been fun. That must have been fun.
Yeah. Yeah. They were intentionally getting into the red. Is that the idea?
Yeah. They were saying like, that's one of the things about just sort of all the mismanagement is sort of like you, because you wanted to turn like, look, all kinds of things that have been going on. It's like, since like Wayne LaPierre, like the way he compensates himself, what he does for his wife to have hair and makeup, all these things, just like on its face. It's like any church, mega church.
Yeah. It feels like a mega church. I was just about to say, it feels very mega churchy.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
My first thought was that it's so interesting. I read the headline before we started talking today. And the first thing I thought was, I actually tensed up because I was like, oh, the right wing is going to make this like, more of this. Liberals are trying to take away all our institutions. I mean, that's what they're going to frame it as, like, oh, another overreach by a crazed progressive to steal one of the foundations of America. Even though, you know, they say that about everything. I mean, NRA is not like a founded, like they act like the NRA was founded by the founding fathers or something.
Yeah, like, I mean, yeah, like Paul like Revere, like he first started all, the
act,
NRA.
Yeah, first of all, they act like the founding fathers are God, only selectively, of course, like unless they disagree with something. But anyway, I just thought the only thing you can do is keep pushing. It doesn't matter what these people say. I mean, this is a moment where you just got to keep doing the right thing. It doesn't matter whether the right wing says you're a goddamn doing it for theater or, you know, I mean, I just think it's interesting. My first thought was to get nervous. I'm like, oh, the right wing's going to this is going to feed the fire for the right wing, but everything feeds the fire for the right wing. So fuck them and just go and do it. Just keep taking them down.
Yeah. I mean, it's so true. Like, cause I think a lot of the things that are happening in the news and just in the last few months, it does feel like they're taking it's the NRA. But, you know, I think that it's that fear of just the outlash that pushes, you know, would be progressives to the center and then just, you know, puts us in a state of inertia. Yes. Like we're inert and we're not able, like we're looking at this, the cycle of violence happening over and over. I'm like, I don't know. But yeah, to that point, it seems like more people have the will to just not care anymore, because it's really about what is the purpose is of all of the things that we do and what the, like morally what we're about rather than politically what it means.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it's hard. It's hard.
Yeah.
Because you face this awful, you know, anyway.
I mean, whether they're wrong or right, I mean, the bottom line is like these ultra conservatives are going to look at this as another step in like the erasure of their culture by liberals and things like that. So, I mean, and yeah, unfortunately, there's no way you can explain to them to look at it differently aside from thinking about statistically what's going on, what they are, what kind of violence they enable as an organization, and what's best for all people in the country.
Yeah, it's a garbage organization. It's a garbage, unnecessary, and I'm sure it is just funnel for money. I mean, they're just psyched to have, they have money for some vague reason. What's their reason? The gun industry is doing fine. You don't need the NRA. It's like, you know, the NRA is just some, it's just a slush fund.
It's for whoever. Yeah. And a massively organized lobbying arm for the gun industry that can activate many, many people to like jam the phone lines on Capitol Hill or whatever, or give that impression, which is one of the most effective part of them is their ability to mobilize their members to scare legislators out of any kind of like functional gun control or gun reform.
Yeah, I guess I'll say one thing quickly, and it's just, and I'm not pushing, I'm not here to talk about alcoholism, but I do find that some of these things that I learned from getting sober applied to this pandemic in the sense that, and to politics as well, because what AA is about is like, or fuck AA, I don't want to bring them into it, but just the idea of recovery is that you suit up and you show up and you put one foot in front of the other, kind of regardless of anything. It's like, it's almost like, you know, it's like, are you going to stay sober? It's like, you don't even think about that. You just, you just take it one day at a time. And I feel like the approach to all this is it's to be fearless. It's just everything's telling you to fucking curl up in a ball and cry at this moment. And everything might be telling you even, oh, well, I don't want to do this because then I'm going to get characterized as some fucking communist or whatever. And it's like, you just got to keep fucking doing it and keep putting that foot in front of the other and seeing what happens. And I've always thought that was one of my favorite things about recovering, was just this idea of doing what you kind of don't want to do because you really want to stay home and hide under a pile of coats. But if you get out and you just keep taking those steps, people will get the fuck out of your way. I mean, sometimes.
And you move towards something good.
Yeah, you just keep moving. And it might feel wrong, but you just keep moving and you keep moving righteously.
But from a broad systemic perspective, I also want to emphasize what you guys were saying at first, that, you know, there was a period, I think, that we're just coming to the end of where Republicans were not making good faith arguments, or like the right was not making good faith arguments, and people like the Democrats and the center left were trying to argue and, you know, be like, okay, they're going to say this, but we're going to say that. And, you know, I always talk about this article from like very early on in the Trump administration that talked about somebody knowing that America was in trouble with the attempt to pass Obamacare because all the Republicans were just immediately like strategically against it no matter what. Like they just wouldn't like have the conversation in the first place. And so like what we're talking about is essentially going like being like, okay, they won't make good faith arguments, so we will no longer make good faith arguments. But that is overall in a bad thing. Right. Like it's the hand is being forced by the right wing, but that's why this whole kind of right wing strategy is dangerous, is because it forces the other side to then nobody's talking to each other. Everyone's talking past each other.
But wait, so you're saying that this attempt at dissolving it is a bad faith argument, or what are you saying?
I guess just what Chris was talking about when he was like, yeah, at first I was like, what's their argument going to be? But now he realizes that like we can't do that. And I agree, we can't do that. But at the same time, like that's.
Well, what are you supposed to say if you just statistically say, like, you know, so many, like there's a new report from the Secret Service that a lot of mass shootings are carried out with illegal guns, like that were illegally obtained. And you say the reason why we have to crank down on these things is because, you know, like where's the bad faith in that? Aside from that, you're dealing with somebody who is completely unwilling or unopen to engage, like on some, you know, level playing field of like, you're saying you may have your perspective on things and I have mine, but like, let's both sit at this table that we agree is a table and the things that are on it are facts and that we are dealing in those things.
Right.
Because that's just the way that the conservatives are able to manipulate Democrats is just because they're saying like, well, I'm just going to sit in this position of bad faith, but then the onus is on you to try and convince me. And you know, damn well, it's not going to happen because I'm just going to laugh at you, everything you say.
Yeah. I'm just saying that's a casualty of the way that the right wing has been moving for the past 20 years, basically. I personally think that guns in America should be regulated the way they are in the UK, and that you should be able to get like a single pump shotgun for hunting and that's it. But that's just me.
You can't argue with people who's just in their response to everything in the end is they just say, what about Chicago?
What about?
They're just full of shit. They're full of shit.
Yeah. It's just tough, yeah. So, very frustrating. Very frustrating to engage people on that level.
Let's talk about schools opening back up. That's something that has been sort of the conversation, like as it relates to, you know, the global pandemic that we are the hotspot of as a country. The newest way that is manifested is, you know, people on Trump's side of things saying we just need to open schools, like kids are going to be fine. And other people more on the scientific side saying
that's absolute horseshit.
Yeah, that's absolute horseshit. And the like, you cannot open schools without like massive changes to the way things are being done at those schools.
Yeah.
So we got a brief window into what at least one school district is looking like as they reopen. And it looks exactly like every school I've ever been
to. Looks like January 2020.
Yeah.
It's just nothing. Yeah.
Right. Just maybe a little more crowded for some reason. Somehow. But
so, yeah, I mean, there has been all these talks, like whether it's, you know, Pence, he was praising this this like private school in North Carolina, saying like it's the model for reopening. Cut to, they had to quarantine an entire like fourth grade class because one of the students tested positive coming to school. And they're like, okay, so it's not the easiest thing. And then with this, there's this image, I think I referred to it maybe yesterday or the day before, but from North Paulding High School in Georgia. And it's just like, you know, to our point, it doesn't look like anything is different. And there was one photo that went viral. There's another video that people were looking at from this same high school. And it turns out that the two students who posted those, they have been suspended from school for posting those images. And, you know, Hannah Waters, who's a 15-year-old, she was one of the people who spoke to like BuzzFeed and was like identifying herself. When they asked her why, what explanation did they give you for just post, it's basically a social media post. You know, you're just saying right. Like, oh, here, look at my school, though. Doesn't look like social distancing or masks. You know, that was sort of like the thrust of the post. It was told that, quote, the policies I broke stated that I used my phone in the hallway without permission, used my phone for social media and posting pictures of minors without consent. That's the way they went with it. And then they go on to say that on Wednesday at the school, an intercom announcement at the school from Principal Gabe Carmona said any student found criticizing the school on social media could face discipline.
I mean, so what that's fascism.
Yeah, I mean, they're just treating students like enemies of
fascism.
Yeah, enemies of the state who are like dissident journalists who's like muckraking is going to bring down this great society. Like, what the fuck are they on? This student, who is 15 fucking years old, mind you, she said she took the photos to raise awareness of how her school, quote, ignorantly opened back up. Not only did they open, but they have not been safe. Many people are not following CDC guidelines because the county did not make these precautions mandatory. Then this school, much in the same way, masks are up to you. Whatever you would like to do. And it's like less than 10% mask use, apparently, from like the anecdotal posts that students have like submitted or whatever. But I mean, it goes to show you that, yeah, it is this trickle down ignorance that's affecting people. And just to that point we were talking about yesterday with that app, you know, the remix to the awful TV interview Trump gave when he went on Fox and Friends and said, you know, all children are immune to all coronaviruses ever. That caused a lot of problems. Like Facebook and Twitter had to pull every iteration of that soundbite off of their platforms because it's a dangerous fucking lie that will get people killed. And the White House was adamant that actually what he was trying to say, which is like their famous way of spinning it, is that kids are at a much lower risk than adults. But CNN's like Oliver Darcy, like there's this article he rightly points out. I mean, Trump is really just. He got in trouble for saying stuff to Fox News that he had just already heard before on Fox News.
Right.
Like, yeah, it was just like an interview with a Fox News viewer. So that take didn't come out of thin air. That is being pumped over the airwaves from Fox constantly, where they're like, hey, we got to get this laborer daycare opened up so the laborers can go. I mean, we have to get the schools back because the children need an education.
Right.
This is a nightmare.
Laborer daycare is a great way of describing the
I'm moving situation. To Ireland.
Oh, I mean, there's Irish Zeit Gang that I'm sure would be glad to have you.
Here's an interesting thing. I don't even know anything about Ireland, but I'm just assuming it's got to be better than here.
I mean, at this point, you know, I feel like that's
I can get a passport. That's why.
Ah, Chris, come on. We need you.
My grandmother was born in Ireland, so I can go to Ireland.
Damn.
And I can show up right now. I'm 51. I got plenty of time to get started. And I'll just show up and say, you know, maybe I'll just put on an apron and say I'm ready for business. And where do I go?
Yeah. Like right this way at the cold brew factory, sir.
Yeah, I was just wondering.
You are now in the minute. You're the ministry of memes.
God, that would be so sad. Oh my god. Yeah, like me at the like checking in at like the
you regret it.
And they're like, dude, I'm like meme production, and they're like, get the fuck out of here.
You could be the Johnny Appleseed of recovery over there.
Yes. None of these are paid jobs.
Right.
But they're all perfect for me. That's the, my life. But it's I will say, really, that just going to Ireland is like crossed my mind. I mean, I don't even know. I mean, I could get a passport because I have a, but I mean, like, I don't know anything about Ireland. When your country's so fucked that you're like, thank God I don't have children, that's sad. I mean, that is fucking sad. You know, all I thought when I was, when you guys were talking, was just like, I just got sad and moving to Ireland. I mean, that's just not, or, you know, replacing this government. I mean, this is, you cannot have a government that's whole job is to destroy government and then have an emergency. I mean, and that's I, small government. And this is like, I think this clever thing that I made up, but it's, I think it's a good way to say it. Small government, small government is just what's left when you stole all the money.
Right.
You know what I mean? Really small government's not a goal. It's a as a result of corruption. Yeah. It's all you can have.
Yes, it's, you just have a hollowed out. You have a hollowed out government.
Truly, small government is just what you're left with when there's no money left because someone stole it. And I just, it's just hard to watch. And we need to replace these fuckers.
Well, that's the thing. I think at all, you hope that more and more people are sort of begin to wake up to like the idea that the way this whole country is being run is completely, completely wrong and fucked up. And most people do not have a semblance of a life that resembles, you know, people in other developed countries based on how they're treated from their employers, the time off they have, their access to any kind of safety nets. It's just, it's just like, you know, we just have really, I always say this, we just have really good PR and marketing. Like like the media shows and films we send out have people like, it's completely devoid of the real, like what it means to be an American, which is like, it actually feels like you're constantly being abandoned. And you're fending for yourself. That's actually what the overwhelming feeling of being an American is. And I think you see it too with like how much we worship money and wealth accumulation. Like it's almost like that's our God, because in a way, because our society is not set up where we're protected or feel safe, the only thing that will make us feel safe is accumulating massive amounts of wealth. That's like the one thing that's like, that will protect me, because even if that goes wrong, I can use money to solve it, because based on what I'm seeing, there's clearly a like buy-in to be able to live at a certain like level of happiness or stability.
Yeah. I keep talking about that book Sapiens, but he identifies capitalism as like the true religion of America, capitalism and science, but we are clearly failing as worshipers of the Church of Science these days.
Yeah, the money prayer people are definitely beating the scientists right now, because those are the loudest voices, and those are the, like, their arguments are being folded up into these arguments about like, we're gonna open the schools though. It's like, no, that's not you. That's not an educator saying that. Right. That's somebody who sits on the board of like a multinational corporation who's like, our revenues are on pause right now. Get these people back out there. What the fuck is going on?
Yep. All right, guys, let's take another quick break. We'll be right back to pick our rewatch for the weekend and talk about some sick parties we've all been to. And we're back. And, you know, we've been helping people plan their calendars for super spreader events, the bike rally in Sturgis, some raves in the Ozarks that we talked about. But here a little closer to home, I thought we could give a little anecdotal accounts of just some of the sick ass. I mean, it's basically like nightclubs, but at like Airbnbs. It's
that's really what's lit. Going I mean,
yeah.
We laugh at everybody, but yeah, we have our own very special, exclusive version of a shithead. I mean, this is a thing that goes on, I'm sure, in other cities, but like hill parties, like, is kind of a thing. Like, some the people put together a little seed money. You rent like a mansion in the hills. You charge a cover that offsets the cost of the rental. You probably lose your deposit because the house is fucked up, and then you keep it moving to the next one. And those have basically continued. There was another one that where there was a, the police had to go to like the Brentwood area or Holmby Hills where the Playboy Mansion is. And they had to break up a gigantic fucking wedding at a mansion where they were like, what the fuck is this? Like, what are y'all doing? And this is just basically continued down a path. And this wedding actually happened, I think, right after the bravest mayor in the land, Eric Garcetti, had said that on starting August 7th, the LAPD is going to work with the DWP, the Department of Water and Power, to shut off utilities at properties found to be hosting parties within 48 hours. And I'm like, oh my God, how effective. My utilities? Oh no. Like, what the fuck are they talking about?
Most of these people at these parties are just drinking tap water and, you know.
Yeah. It's just like a such a weird, I mean, because it's funny, because I feel like a lot of the people where this is happening is almost like in these wealthier areas. And you almost be like, you can't find them. Looks like they could deal with that. But it's just very clear, like, our city is not anywhere close to where it needs to be in terms of like being able to safely, just to not, you know, put all of our frontline workers at risk. But it's all just, I think, part of this whole, you know, global, especially in America thing, where people are just unable to reconcile their needs to be able to go out and socialize with the fact that there's a deadly pandemic, or it's the inability to, you know, surrender to the idea that we are biologically completely out of and scientifically out of control on this one.
I remember when Italy was having their shutdown, back when Italy was like the scary story that we didn't want to become.
Like the end of February, right?
Right. And there were like isolated stories of a handful of people who like snuck out beyond like curfew, or like got out of towns that had been totally locked down, and like they got busted and shamed. And there was this like big social media push to like shame anybody who was going outside. Yeah, where is all that? Where, like, it's just America's too, there's too much going on for us to just have a coordinated message.
It's like, legally, how do you lock down a country like this? Like, you can't legally do it. So then on top of that, there are people in their minds who are like, well, you can't legally do that, so why am I going to do that?
Right.
Like, which is the same weird, like, quasi-constitutional, like, motivation these people have to not wear masks, etc. Because, again, it's just like, fuck you, I'll do whatever I want.
Okay, so I got to tell, my Zoom keeps messing up because I'm in the damn woods. So I just basically fell into a heap of guitars. I don't know if anyone saw what was happening out here, they would. Anyway,
I'm picturing a bear just like pawing your Wi-Fi box behind your house
to draw you out.
I'm running around this cabin, like press myself up against the windows to try and make the Zoom stay going. So anyway, real quick, because this is important. In Nashville, they just had one of these parties. I mean, and it went like nationwide because this guy ate ass on Instagram. And at this house in Nashville called the Fashion House, which is an Airbnb that they painted like Yves Saint Laurent logos on the walls. And they say it's a homage to, I mean, their Instagram is so poorly punctuated, it's almost impossible to understand what their fucking fashion house is about. But they called it the Fashion House. I mean, that's about all you need to know. If you are an opportunity to brand something and you call it the Fashion House, you pretty much know how stupid the people are. So these people had a party at this place called the Fashion House. They had no masks. And some visiting porn star flew into Nashville. His name is Daddy's Juiced. He flew into Nashville.
Daddy's Juiced. He does good work, actually.
Ate ass for like 2 seconds. I mean, it was certainly not satisfying for whoever's ass it was. And then he flew away the next day. Like, he like went on Instagram and he was like, peace out, Nashville. I'm a legend.
Like some ass eating Santa Claus. No, said, like, good night. I'm out. See you next year.
He came to Nashville without a mask, went to the Fashion House, ate someone's ass on Instagram, and then tweeted out, like, peace out, Nashville. I was on Fox News for eating ass.
Wow. Yeah. That does feel so 2020,
peak.
Though.
That's
you
peak.
Know?
That's what I'm saying. That's peak apocalypse right there. That doesn't get...
Like, what's like, what? A guy flew in to just do analingus and then immediately leaved, and that was the gig?
Yes.
I feel like that's a story that Rush Limbaugh would make up if he knew that ass eating
the
was
problem
a thing
is,
that people were into.
Hold on. You're saying people eat someone's ass? Now, how do you do that?
You would assume that you were like eating. Yeah, you would assume that it was like
hold on.
Roast.
Terry, send me a link really quick. Oh my God. Okay. These kids, man, these millennials, I tell you. It's, well, hey, man, you get it how you live.
Yeah. Also, just an incredibly efficient way to spread.
That's what I mean. It's, well,
any disease.
Eating ass is like, I ate ass in 1986. So the idea that, first of all, it's annoying to me that eating ass is like, it's basically a meme come to life. Like, it's not, eating ass is not, right. He didn't even eat an ass. He licked an ass for a photo op. Like, that's not eating an ass.
Right.
Nobody.
Yeah.
It's, he basically did like, a live call that eating ass? He did a meme.
These kids aren't in it for the love of the game.
It's basically people are, the internet has become like, he did a live action meme is what he did.
Right.
It started out as a punchline. Everybody's punchline for every joke all of a sudden, eating ass, like, which is, I mean, and then it became like, I'm going to eat ass on Instagram and I'm a legend. And
yeah, that ain't eating ass though, huh?
There needs to be a major reset of everything, include a reset of senses, I hope.
Right. Yeah, we have to actually have a standard of eating ass because, you know, like to your point, Chris, it sounds like you had a problem with the commitment of ass eating.
It's like,
and don't go into it like you're, you know, licking a 9-volt battery for the first time.
Well, you don't do it like you're an emoji. I mean, he basically did it like he was an ass-eating emoji. Like, people are out there.
By the way,
emojis. I don't even know. It's just very complicated and very sad.
I ate ass in 1986.
I don't even feel like digging through it because it's so sad. It's just every part of it's sad. His name is Daddy's Juice apostrophe.
Yeah. Now he does good work sometimes, but it sounds like his commitment wasn't.
You don't know
really
who he is, do you?
Oh yeah. He's one of the best. I don't know. All right. Let's really quickly decide on a rewatch for the weekend. I'm just gonna tick through the top 10 on Netflix currently. We got The Umbrella Academy at number 1, Shameless from Showtime at number 2. World's Most Wanted at number 3, Malibu Rescue at number 4, which appears to be a children's show version of Baywatch. Hmm. Jurassic Park is at number 5. I think that's what I'm going to do because Jurassic Park just returned to Netflix.
I just need it.
I just need that right now.
I want Dennis Nedry
make
wildlines.
My kids watch it so that I can, put the fear of God in them.
Oh, yeah, and explain why Sam Jackson's arm was detached from his body inexplicably.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. And it's been like the number one movie at the box office all summer, the original Jurassic Park, just because people are showing drive-ins. Immigration Nation.
Hey, just a little real fun fact. I never saw Jurassic Park.
That's unbelievable. Oh,
Chris, we'll remedy that. We'll remedy that.
Aye, that is something we shall have to remedy. I have so many Braveheart quotes in my brain, and they are of no use.
Chris, you seen Braveheart?
I did see Braveheart. That was before I started
going hard.
I started banging heroin.
Sugar Rush Extra Sweet, which is a cooking show about food that is sugary, I believe.
Hey, look, if it's not nailed it, don't bother. Netflix, come on. Just give Nicole Byer them, you know.
The Last Dance, we've already talked about plenty. Dennis the Menace, The Ridge.
I referenced that, actually, the scene where Walter Matthau's denture teeth are replaced with big chiclets is something a visual trope I talk about a lot. But, you know, I think the Zeit Gang has heard me talk plenty about Dennis the Menace.
And then Latte, which is a children's movie.
I'm torn between these god awful children's films because you always I always get to watch like the adult thing, and then you always gonna like, I guess I'll watch it with my kids. And sometimes I'm like, let me have the really in depth analysis of a story about a greedy bear that steals a magic stone to keep the forest water for himself. A brave hedgehog and a timid squirrel must work together to retrieve it.
You're talking Latte right there, man.
Yeah, that's Latte. That doesn't feel like it's going to venture enough into problematic town as much as I'd like.
I think Malibu Rescue is your...
Yeah.
is
like
your
the
move.
Way it is. As summer turns to returns to Malibu, Team Flounder takes to the beach to host and unexpectedly compete in the International Beachmaster competition, which looks like essentially like a Tough Mudder race, but for wealthy people
with sand. Yeah,
yeah,
in Malibu.
And I can only imagine what kind of, you know what, that's I it seems so formulaic that I love watching films like this where I try and just like watch the first like 5 minutes and be like, okay, I know exactly what the movie's about.
The concept of Baywatch for children is so wild.
I just saw a thing where the trophy for winning this Beachmaster competition is a bronze butt. Okay.
And at one point during the trailer, the defending champs, Team USA, bites on the butt. So,
all right, mate. There's also Aussies there. All right, mate. Yeah, hey. We got it all, mate. Here we go.
All right. So that's what we got. Malibu Rescue and Jurassic Park, number 4 and 5.
Do you guys have Criterion Channel, either of you?
I do not. I haven't watched like TV like where I've like intentionally been like, let me cruise over to that channel real quick in a long time.
Criterion Channel is like a streaming service that it's like the art film.
Right. Service. Oh, okay. Like, got it. Yeah. For the Criterion. No, I don't.
$10.99 a month.
Offer cold. And put in code cold brew got me like for what? 10% off your first month.
I don't know. I gave the password to some other people that they're using it. So I guess you can pass around the password and they don't know how to fix it. They don't know how to stop you. So I've been watching. I just wanted to mention Tarkovsky, the Russian director.
Mm-hmm.
He directed Solaris in 1962, which was remade, I think, with like Ryan Gosling or something in 2004.
Right.
And he's influenced by Kubrick, obviously, quite a bit. But the movies are about dread, and they really, they're slow. But they are. I just wanted to offer those people, for people listening, if they want something that sort of, he was making those movies when the Soviet Union was collapsing.
Mm-hmm.
So the movies are about people that have lost, societies that have lost the narrative and lost belief.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, absolutely. Especially, it's something about Russian creators. They really nail that existential dread so well. And I can only imagine someone like Tarkovsky, who's like born in 32, like you witness like an entire generation of men wiped out by the war. And then like that, like reverberation into your country for decades to come.
Sorry, I stepped away. Are we still talking Malibu Rescue?
No, we're talking about we're talking about the works of Andrei Tarkovsky, Jack.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Anyway, just that he's a director, a Russian director from the 70s that his movies are existential dread and love and is worth it. So those things I found comforting in a way, even though the movies are dark, really.
Chris, and I was just want to say, just to double check, you said you were eating ass back in 1986, right? Because as I look, Andrei Tarkovsky passed away on December 29th, 1986.
Oh, okay.
So just putting that out there. I don't know if there's any connection there. big year.
Chris, it's been a pleasure as always having you on the Daily Zeitgeist. Where can people find you and follow you?
So much fun to be on here. I'm so grateful for you guys. And you can find me. The Crofton Show on Twitter, which is where I write poems all the time. And I also am on Instagram at Chris_Crofton. And also I'm starting a podcast soon and it's going to be called Cold Brew Got Me Like, and I haven't told anybody about it. So now people, because that means I have to make it.
Let them know.
So it's going to be on Twitch, I guess. Not Twitch. What do you call it? Yeah, Twitch. It's going to be like a live Twitch, and then I'm going to do an audio one. But it's friend and a producer and stuff. And, I'm excited about it. And, also, going to be, a scam for me to make money.
Nice. Scam. God.
Anyway, I just got to figure out some way to get, I'm a bartender. That's not happening.
Right. Hey, and is there a tweet or some other work of social media you've been enjoying?
Oh, I'll let you guys go first.
Okay. Miles, where can people find you and follow you, and what's a tweet you've been enjoying?
Oh, Twitter, Instagram, at Miles of Gray. Also, my other podcast, 420 Day Fiancé. If you watch 90 Day Fiancé, then it's the number one rated 90 Day Fiancé podcast out there. I can say that without confidence. But in my mind, I say it with great confidence. Yeah, some tweets that I like. Let's see. First up. I'm sorry. Okay, first one is at from Soul Nate, at M. Nate Shyamalan. Says, time traveler, what year is this? Me, LMAO. Oh, man, you fucked up so bad. then there's another one that says, this is from at Pyle Patel. It says, Scully will yell, federal agent, at anything. Girl, that's literally an alien. It doesn't care. and then another one is from at Jenny E. Nicholson saying, fellas, are you still powdering your balls? A targeted YouTube ad selected just for me by a meticulous algorithm after years of gathered data.
Yeah. I actually had that one too. Some tweets I've been enjoying. First of all, Alex Schmidty, former host of the Crack Podcast, just tweeted that he is excited to announce that he's launching his own dang podcast. It's called Secretly Incredibly Fascinating. Y'all need to check it out. Alex is the man, and I've never heard him be anything less than amazing to listen to on a podcast. Some other tweets I've been enjoying. Alex Bays tweeted, me, this meeting could have been an email. Also me, gets an email. God damn it. and Miel, former guest of the show, and also
all she's known for.
Former guest of this show.
You might have heard her in that one.
Storied former guest of the show. Also, she has a really great podcast called Punch Up the Jam. She tweeted, if I had $1 million for every time Akon bought a city in Senegal and named it Akon City and invented an official cryptocurrency and named that Acoin, I would have $1 million. which is a great way to learn that fact. And finally, Cullen Crawford tweeted, never before has Cirque du Soleil so beautifully told the story of the death of Osama bin Laden at the hands of the American government. you can find us on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes, where we link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as the song we write out on. Miles, what's it going to be today?
Okay, let's go, you know, just because we're just talking about money going around and flying everywhere, let's do a track called Dollars by Hudson Mohawk. I was just listening to this song the other day, like, I don't know, high maybe, and I was just thinking of the song and just how much the dollars is everything that, yeah, we worship, but this track goes, though. So play this at your next Super Spreader event. Just kidding.
All right, we're going to ride out on that. The Daily Zeitgeist is a production by iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. That's going to do it for this morning. We'll be back this afternoon to tell you what's trending, and we'll talk to you then. Bye.
Bye.
They just dollars. They just dollars. They just dollars, 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 dollars.